The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Only NFL podcasts or one of the hosts thinks close games should be called human fights. Why are they dog fights? Why are dog fights got to be close? That's Lenny. I mean, it comes. I introduced myself and did jazz hands for some reason for the YouTube audience. Podcast audience, now you know. I am so pumped to be joined this week by not only a longtime friend of the show, real life friend, but also now a colleague because he has a new podcast at Omaha Productions. This is Football. This is Kevin Clark. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, pal? Colleague. I'm excited. Colleague. We both have Omaha Productions microphones. I feel so official.
Thanks for coming to my podcast. There's some discourse today about podcast invitations. You accepted mine. I appreciate that. I'll always accept yours.
I'll say this. So I appreciate that. I need you to come on This Is Football soon when we run out of quarterbacks. But Ryan Russillo gave me the best advice about going on other people's shows I've ever gotten in my life, which was we're walking around Radio Row and we're just getting hounded by people just being like, hey, can you give 10 minutes for this show, this show, this show? I'm certainly not going to name any of those shows.
The vibe on Radio Row,
yeah,
generally.
Yeah. And he said to me,
it's like a bizarre takes.
He said, the only thing worse than what's happening right now is if it wasn't happening.
That's good.
And he said, one day we're going to be walking around and like,
wow. Love that.
ESPN Albuquerque is not going to ask us for 10 minutes and we're going to be begging for what's happening now.
I like that. That's a man who knows where his bread is buttered. I wonder if you're in Albuquerque, do you root for the Cardinals? Probably with the Cardinals, right? If listeners, if you're in New Mexico,
let me know who Cowboys.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. Though the Cowboys have a pretty
The other thing is you can't discount. And like my dad used to tell me these stories, and I didn't really believe them, but it makes sense because I remember being at a Panthers game against Washington a couple years ago, not like a decade ago, and like if like the teams in like 1970. Because there weren't that many, they just had huge regional fan bases, and so like Washington had the entire South, and the Cowboys probably had the entire Southwest. Like it's that generation, then they passed it on to their kids, their grandkids. Right. Also, the Cowboys were good, much better than the Cardinals.
That's why like kids, a lot of people our age, you know, you grew up on the '90s Cowboys, or I've talked about this. If you live overseas, but you like the NFL, you're probably a Cowboys fan of that age.
Or a Dolphins fan, because Marino was on like every single week. The big thing I've always heard about London is it's a lot of Niners fans and a lot of Dolphins fans, because they just like, because over at Sky or whatever, they'd be like, hey, what are we going to put on? Well, these freaking quarterbacks are just throwing darts all over the field. Let's just put them on a bunch at 3 a.m. That'll get the fellas, the lads pumped.
I want to find like a random city where everyone is like somewhere in the world where people just root for the Titans. I don't know. And maybe it's because like a Tennessee Titan came, you know, in 1965. Someone do that story. Find me the city that is a weirdly allegiant to a specific team. And I would love that. We are talking about the Titans today. By the way,
so we're not just talking about weird geographic rooting interests for an hour.
That's my segue. No, we're going to talk about six games again. Some probably a little bit longer than others. And then you're gonna, as I mentioned to you right before we logged on, you're gonna help me pick my games. I actually didn't look to see how I did last week.
Thanks for the heads up on that, by the way. But we're gonna be doing a Hammer and Hank pick segment.
Good way to get through all the games, but. Yeah, there's a few good games this week. I do think it's a good opportunity to talk about teams we might not talk about later in the year when they're not relevant. But that's not the case with the first game that I want to get at. We're going to talk about two very relevant teams I expect to be relevant for a while, the Chiefs and the Jags. The 0-1 Kansas City Chiefs playing the 1-0 Jacksonville Jags. I want to start there because there's a bit of a news peg that will affect the game. Travis Kelce's dating Taylor Swift. No, it's Chris Jones is back. I think Travis Kelce is back too. I tried to check that. It sounds, the language coming out of Kansas City, it sounds like he'll play.
So, but the problem was, so the photographers and reporters were taking Twitter videos of him today, and he looked fine, but they all were using it as a jumping off point to make Taylor Swift jokes. And I'm just like, well, somebody please tell me if this guy's playing. Yeah.
Well, I actually had this thought. I promise we're going to get to the game very shortly because it is an interesting and important game. Obviously, a playoff rematch. Usually when an athlete's dating like a famous person, people are like, oh, this could be a distraction and say like horribly sexist things when they don't play well and stuff. But like, I actually had that thought because I was trying to find Travis Kelce's injury status just searching Google News. And it was so overwhelmed by Taylor Swift content. It's the ultimate smokescreen.
Well, let me actually...
It's so hard to wade through the news right now.
Let me actually take the other side of that. Is anyone going to be better at finding out whether or not he's going to play than Swifties?
No, than Swifties, yeah.
Like, we're just going to have to go on, like, the... I don't know. I assume there's some sort of Reddit for Taylor Swift or something where they all congregate. I don't know. But we need them to... Like, we need to refresh that until they figure out. They're, like, staking out. Like, I remember, like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I went to a national concert a couple weeks ago, and there were a bunch of Swifties there just in case Taylor showed up, and then she didn't, and they just got moody indie rock for 2 hours.
Here's a sort of a meme on X right now, on Twitter, where I think it's some Swiftie, like aggregator or something saying, what do we know about this guy? And it's all football people quote tweeting with like reports on his blocking and stuff.
Are we gonna get Swifties going to Chiefs games in the off chance that she's there?
Well, what we might get is what happened to Victor or Wemby when Britney fans turned on him and his first game was bad and Britney Twitter just savaged him. If Travis Kelce crosses Taylor Swift, or if somebody crosses Travis Kelce, he is now the most, at this moment, he is now the most protected man on earth. So, okay, no more Swift stuff. Let's talk about Chris Jones first.
Yeah.
Because he is going to play after agreeing to come back for fairly little concessions. Holding out in the NFL sucks. Not much to say about that other than that.
Yep.
I think the question I want to talk to you about, and especially kind of as it pertains to this matchup, is, how good the Chiefs defense looks, because they played pretty damn well without him. I thought the defensive line was able to get pressure against Detroit in the opener. Now, a lot of that was through blitzing, which they don't have to do as much, obviously, with Chris Jones back in the mix. But when I had a chance to rewatch the game, you know, I was pretty impressed by like Mike Dana, who they move inside on pass rush downs. I wrote Adedike Uzama. I'm trying to get that to roll off my tongue. The first round draft pick I thought looked pretty, pretty fast. And now I think, you know, you throw Chris Jones back into the mix. The Jags offensive line, Trevor gets the ball out so quickly, it negates a lot of the pressure that they face. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a little bit of a mismatch that favors Kansas City with Chris Jones, you know, actually playing.
Yes, I agree. And we saw McDuffie as well, who's playing really well on Thursday. Yeah. I'm of the opinion that especially good teams like the Chiefs, they don't really need to overdo it in September. You get to sort of learn the chemistry of it. And I actually don't, I know this is a crazy thing to say, but I don't hate the idea of them playing a game without Chris Jones in week one of the season, just to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
I'm glad the second best player on the team is back. That's a good thing. But I didn't hate it. You know, I think that in the fourth quarter they needed him. I think our friend Dominic Foxworth tweeted, you know, congrats Chris Jones after the loss, because they did get whipped a little bit as the game went on. But this is a game that the Chiefs should win. They should have won last week. Kadarius Toney is wide receiver Zach Wilson, where I just, for some reason, things just, they're running it back, and I just think there's a lot of guys on the street who could be significantly better. But I think if there's a Kelce and a Jones on the field last week, you just see a little bit different. But I think this Chiefs defense can be the Super Bowl defense they need him to be, and especially with Chris Jones. I mean, if he was actually gone to week 8, I'd have my bigger concerns. Yeah. But like, he needed the contract to toll. Like he was in the building. Like he was making a statement that he was a Chief in week one of the season. I'd have been much more concerned if he wasn't doing that. And he was maybe going to be checked out. He's not, he's got $25 million now on a 1 year deal. Who knows what the hell happens after this season, but I'm optimistic in the entire unit.
You mentioned Tony. So let's just get into that. And again, I'm assuming Kelce plays. He might be a little bit limited, but honestly, even 60% Travis Kelce is better than what we saw out of this Kansas City receiving group, especially because of just kind of his presence on the field and the gravity that it creates. I think the thing about Tony that fascinates me, other than, you know, he had one of the worst
is that the thing that fascinates you?
That they kept going to him, mm-hmm. and it was very obvious that they view him as the number. I think the number one wide receiver in this offense. Like
and Mahomes still trusts him, which is says something. And maybe this is sort of a lose the battle, win the war thing, where if they think they can develop him and get him on the same page, it will pay dividends in December and January and February. They had 8 drops last week. They had, by the way, Mahomes' rating in a clean pocket was actually quite low. It was in the 60s somewhere. So he was also missing a little bit, but I don't think
Trust anything that was happening on, like, the spacing of the wide receivers. All of it was just...
I completely agree. And it was funny. I was watching the press conferences today, and Kadarius Toney said, the drops are on me. There's no excuse. It's like, yeah, we know. We're good. Thank you. Thank you for your accountability, but you actually...
Somewhere Sky Moore's in the corner, thank God nobody's asking me any questions.
But it'll be interesting because I don't know. I watched the Jaguars defense obviously quite a bit, and they were covering the Colts receivers pretty well. They were taking away the deep ball, though, against Anthony Richardson. Who knows what that was supposed to look like. Obviously. I've seen some Tyson Campbell buzz. So it'll be an interesting matchup, at least, to see I'm of the opinion, kind of going back to what I said earlier, like, remember, like, when the Seahawks and the Patriots at the beginning of the last decade would just take September off, and, like, the Seahawks would lose to a Rams team that was headed to 7-9. They'd lose the Chargers. And it was just like, yeah, whatever. Like, we know how to play our best football in December. I'm of the opinion that, like, these teams are allowed to experiment a little bit, especially on offense. And if they have a couple of weird games, like, I just think we've gotten to a point where everybody's like, well, why won't we criticize Mahomes? Because we've already done this like 4 times where he's had like a rough September game, and then he goes out and wins MVP. They win the Super Bowl, all that stuff. So I'm not, even if they have a weird game on Sunday, I'm not going to make any declarations.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick missing like a couple of open receivers was like maybe 19th on the list of things that went wrong for Kansas City in the game. What really struck me, and I didn't really get into this the first time, was how bad they looked running the ball on Detroit, which is something I thought they would be able to do with ease. And some of it, they went away from it a little bit. But, you know, last year, the Chiefs' offense was exceptional running the football, in part because they face so many light boxes. But against Detroit, Isaiah Pacheco only averaged 3.6 yards per carry running into light boxes. The whole rushing attack, and I'm sure Travis Kelce's absence actually, you know, he is a good blocker. Like, he matters a lot, as well as I said this coming into the game, and I wish I put more stock in it, losing Jody Fortson, who's probably their other best blocker as a tight end, affected how bad they looked running the ball. But now you're facing a Jags team that, Kevin, like, and this is maybe what I was most surprised by, really limited Indianapolis on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about Chris Jones winning. Jonathan Taylor was quietly a big winner of that first week for Indy. So I'll be curious to see if reinserting Kelce into this lineup improves the Chiefs' rushing attack, because that was so important to what they did last year and obviously was incredibly important in the Super Bowl.
Are you putting any stock into the Juwan Taylor tipping allegations?
I have read reports that have made me not want to take a strong stance on it. I am always very afraid to look. There's okay. Let me blunt. Oh well, offensive line internet is the meanest internet. I don't want smoke. I don't do takes. You will never see me tweeting about a guy holding, because there is no humans on earth love to tell you someone isn't holding more than offensive linemen on Twitter.
Well, no. You go the other way and you just suck up to them by just tweeting the phrase bully ball every couple of weeks. And
you or just you say cool that's on the quarterback.
Yeah. There's a chart floating around. Ian Harditz, I think, put it out there. I don't know if you saw it, about time to pressure versus how many sacks they took. That's basically just a big old chart, a four quadrant chart of like, this is on the quarterback. And it seems like maybe Daniel Jones, it's not on him. But boy, there are some guys there that are squarely in the crosshairs of offensive line Twitter. Ryan Tannehill among them, by the way. Sam Howell, by the way, Sam Howell is by far the worst at that. He takes the longest time to throw and he gets sacked. The offensive line was holding up on Sunday. And Ruiz and I have been texting you about this for 6 weeks.
About the sacks. Yeah, he's going to take a lot of sacks.
He sat back there for 4.5 seconds in training camp. He was pump faking at the goal line.
Well, on that note, I do want to say one more thing about the Jags, which is they speaking of quarterbacks holding on to football and getting sacked, they did get to Richardson a lot. And this was something I was kind of interested in, because last season they had a very high pressure rate, very high pass rush win rate, but low sack rate, which felt like something, you know, was going to break at some point. I thought Josh Allen was incredible in this game. Trevon Walker made some big plays as well. So, you know, that's another thing. I think with Kansas City, I never really worried too much about Mahomes because he's just so good at evading sacks. But I do think this Jags pass rush is for real. You got to take them seriously. So I got the Chiefs in this one, but I mean, we haven't even talked about how sick Calvin Ridley looked. I do think, like, even, you know, I know at the top we talked about Chris Jones being back and how the defense looked good and the defensive line should look good. And there being a mismatch there. That said, I really do think Trevor Lawrence getting the ball out quickly, the weapons they have, you know, I think Jacksonville will be able to move the ball on them.
I completely agree. And I'm as impressed as you with the Jacksonville front seven. I think that they're a team that's built, like, I know we all laugh at Trent Baalke, and he didn't do all of this. He's only been the GM for a couple of years, and obviously he was under Urban and all that stuff. But like, one thing he's going to get right is big athletic bodies up front, and that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, Walker. I was encouraged. Okay, Ravens Bengals is really fascinating to me, especially for Cincinnati coming off of like just a brutal, brutal loss that, like, I think because of the timing kind of flew, I don't want to say it flew under the radar and the weather and whatnot, but there were so many brutal, like, weird losses this weekend and, you know, upsets and whatnot. And, you know, I think going from Sunday Night Football to Monday Night Football, everything kind of got washed away, but like that was very bad for Cincinnati. And they're facing a Ravens team that beat down on, you know, a rookie-led Houston squad, but speaking of beat down, appears to be missing about 50% of their roster. Yep. So we are taping this on. Let's start there, because I think you got to start there. It's Wednesday. I think Mark Andrews is going to play, and that's about it. It's going to be Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews and Zay Flowers. So injuries from the Houston game. Marcus Williams, who is their starting safety, is very good, and I think is definitely not playing. The two offensive linemen are question marks, but they did not practice. Ronnie Stanley, Tyler, who's the left tackle, Tyler Linderbaum, and then they lost J.K. Dobbins for the season. I mean, is this Ravens team? I pointed out the injuries on, and people responded by noting that how bad their injury staff was reviewed in that player report. I totally forgot about that. Well, they're not beating the allegations week one.
We should look deeper into it than just the Cardinals made people pay for dinner. Although you can't overstate how much that would suck to be an NFL player and just like, oh, we have to pay for
just
to go
you, order. Especially if it's like, you know, like $7 is like kind of insulting.
Let me rephrase $7. Wait, let's stop right there. Let's dive into this. Would you rather it be like $30? Okay.
No, but it's just so cheap. Let me ask you a question though. Of all the injuries I just named, which one in this game concerns you the most?
I would guess Ronnie Stanley or Tyler Linderbaum, only because, so here's the stat, ready? 15 of 15, Lamar Jackson, 10 yards per attempt when kept clean Sunday. When pressured, 2 of 7 for 14 yards, 1 interception, 3 sacks. That ain't good. And it was interesting. I saw a quote. I don't know if you saw it either. Jonathan Grenard, the Texans defensive end, said that he thought that because Lamar just got paid, he wanted to sit in the pocket more. I think it's just the opposite, frankly. Yeah. It was a very strange thing. But basically, they were saying that that's why they got to him, whatever. Let's put that aside for a second. I thought that was bizarre. But the Texans played okay on Sunday. And like Will Anderson had that sack where he was getting held, which is called an and one in defensive line Twitter. But I was actually a little bit disappointed with how sloppy the Ravens were. They were not nearly as sloppy as the Cincinnati Bengals, who I can delve into here in a second. But that's my biggest concern is the line, only because of those stats, what we saw. And I will say this, in doing my research here, Ravens are underdogs. Lamar Jackson is the second best outright record via Jameson Hensley, as he is the second best outright record as an underdog in the Super Bowl era. Okay, who is number one?
Wait, the best as an underdog?
Mm-hmm. Just straight up record. Eight and four. Lamar Jackson, 8-4.
Wow. I'm trying to think of guys who have, because Mahomes probably hasn't been an underdog in like a real. Okay, who is it? Tell me.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Jimmy Can't wins.
That's what he does.
I thought you were going to say that Lamar, I forget what his record is against Burrow. I think it's pretty good. There's a real opportunity, by the way, you know, like Burrowhead, for them to, this is in Cincinnati, right? I think it is. For them to call it Zaycor Stadium if Zay Flowers goes.
So I was watching some cut-ups of Zay Flowers. He's got a real chance to be like the prince, the young prince of screen grabs of like, dude, this was a first down. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
the amount of times where
there were four Texans around him, and then he would only go like an extra 3 yards, but it was astounding. He's almost like the Lamar Jackson of receivers, where we'll just have guys around him and he will then make the play, just extend it in a way that just seems completely unnatural to the game of football.
I'm so glad you pointed that out, because watching this offense, and I'll get to some of the issues they had, I think, he's so clearly the dude, which we didn't really know. Bateman and OBJ, whatever. No, he is the focal point of this offense. It'll be interesting with Mark Andrews back in the mix. And, you know, coming into coming out of the draft, he was seen, maybe not by, you know, ball knowers, I guess, but he's a speedster, right? It's like, oh, okay, he's a guy who can stretch the field and, you know, but is he another Hollywood Brown? Is he gonna like just be that speedster? Mm-hmm. Is he reliable? And what you saw from the jump, which you just highlighted, is he is a creator. Like, he's small, but he is strong, dude. He is evasive and fast and all of those things. But they will use him on screens and sweeps and manufacture touches for him. Like, he, to me, was a real bright spot week one. And a lot of the rookie wide receivers looked really good, but oh my God, watching him, I felt exactly the same way. I was like, this dude is going to be a guy in the NFL. They hit it out of the park with him.
So Debo Samuel was on my show when this drops, and he said that the Niners are taught to run to space. That's it. And it's like, oh, of course, but it's like easier said than done. Creating space, like, space is the lifeblood of like any sport with a field, whether it's soccer, whether it's NFL football, like whatever. And the ability to create something out of nothing with space is just like the rarest thing outside of a perfectly thrown pass. And so I just, when I see that, and I'm just a guy who can use deceleration against the defender, like, that to me is the most exciting thing you can possibly say.
The one thing I will say about the Ravens offense, because sloppy, you said, is how I would describe it as well. It looked like in the first half they were still figuring stuff out, And I thought as the game went on, it's like, okay, now you're starting to see, you know, all we spent all summer talking about this new look, spread them out, 11 personnel Ravens offense. And you kind of, I think it took them a second to gel. And as the game went on, I thought it looked better. But the one thing that I thought was still a little bit of an issue, and I'll be curious to see this week, is it felt, the run game didn't feel integrated with the pass game the way that I hoped it would. So last year, when the Ravens were not in 11 personnel very much, but when they mm-hmm. were in 11 personnel, they passed at the highest rate in the NFL. I thought that would come way down as they bumped up the three wide receiver stuff, and it didn't. This week, when they had three wide receivers on the field, they passed 85% of the time. When they did run, mm-hmm. they broke off some big runs, but Todd Monken was so good at integrating the run in the pass in college. Yeah. I think that's what I would, that's kind of the next step I want to see with his offense, other than better route running and just this, the spacing of it all as well. So the Ravens have in recent year, or really the last two times these teams played in particular, given Cincinnati a very difficult time on offense, most lately in the playoffs.
They're both born in 1997, but Lamar is older.
The Bengals are coming off of like a really, really embarrassing offensive game against Cleveland. Now, I talked about this with Dominique because I talked about the Browns defense. The things that Cleveland did on defense, a lot of them are not things that the Ravens can do. Like if the Ravens, with all of the aforementioned injuries, try to play that much man coverage and blitz and stuff, right, it's not going to work out for them. However, Kevin, they've been, Mike McDonald, he's on him watch.
He is on him watch, and Stephen Ruiz was on my show months ago, and he said that Mike McDonald and Joe Burrow going against each other is going to be, and this was a complete heat check.
So nerdy. This sentence is already so nerdy.
He said that McDonald versus Burrow was this generation's Brady Manning.
Such an idiot. Okay, but all right, McDonald's hand is tied behind his back here. So no Marcus Williams, no Marlon Humphrey. I don't know who's playing corner. Pass rush did look good, but it was against the battered Houston offensive line. Not that, the Bengals offensive line did look great week one.
So a couple things. Number one, I was watching some of the press conferences here. Brian Callahan, the Bengals OC, described what Myles Garrett was doing as a Euro step and like basketball moves, because he was literally pretending
when
to dribble
the ball.
When he was
lined up over the
legs.
Center. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so messed up.
And they said the coaches and the players basically were like, Garrett was feeling himself. He's allowed to do that. He's really good. I don't think I'm concerned long-term about the Bengals offense. I've told this story a million times. I will tell one more time. That basically Burrow has told me before that it takes him a while for his vision to catch up with the sharpness he needs to be able to run the offense in the way that he does. I mean, he basically told me once when he came back to practice after the ACL, he saw 21 people in front of him, same as you or I, right? We don't have the vision to say like, okay, this linebacker is dropping, whatever. Like it takes him a while for that. That was in training camp when he's thrown a bunch of interceptions 2 years ago, but I do think you can glean something from that. I don't think that he's going to go 0-for-8 on targets with T. Higgins going forward. I think that was a one-time thing. I don't think he's going to get Irv Smith open and just miss him because of the rain. That was a one-time thing. The third down stats, and I was reading Paul Diener, the third down stats are really grim. They're typically one of the best third down teams in football. They're normally amazing at that. And so I know this sounds, and I think Zach Taylor didn't think there was going to be that kind of rain. That kind of game plan was not really installed. So I'm just not that concerned. I mean, there's a couple of things. When I was in Cincinnati a couple of weeks ago, and you and I have texted about this, but Hayden Hurst was brought up a lot as a guy who was really able to save them in some of those check down situations and some of those, okay, they're taking away the deep ball. They're going to sell out to stop those three receivers. Let's let Tyler Boyd do the dirty work and let's have Hayden Hurst get open. That was happening over and over and over again, whether it was against Buffalo. I think New Orleans was in the mix there. Like that was happening over and over with those two guys in particular. Take Hayden Hurst out of the equation. It's going to take someone like Irv Smith a little bit of time in that role, maybe. You saw that a little bit. So they didn't play. Listen, nobody played in the preseason. I mean, like, I think I saw a quote from one of the Bengals this week that was basically like, we didn't play in the preseason, and then we just, you know, like, it's raining, and we're playing this fast-ass defense, and it's like, man, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all that is totally fair. And I, like I said, I don't think the Ravens have the personnel to, you know, single up those receivers. I expect defensively the Ravens to kind of do something not too dissimilar from what we've seen from them the last couple of times. Way more cover two quarters. The thing that they have that's sort of unique when they do that, and you talked about how Burrow, like, against those looks, you know, he throws to the middle of the field, Tyler Boyd, Irv Smith Jr. would be your targets there, is the Ravens have an elite linebacker duo. So it kind of, and that allows them also to do all that bluffing up front, play games. Roquan Smith could be in the line of scrimmage 1 second, then he could be, like, covering a guy up the seam. He is, by the way, oh my God, that was watching the Houston tape. It was amazing. He is amazing. He's like one of my favorite football players to watch right now. So I think that they have an interesting marriage of a very good defensive play caller, a very good linebacker. Usually the spine of their defense is very strong, but man, down those corners and those safeties, that makes it hard. If just to kind of sum it up, if Williams wasn't hurt, if Williams and Humphrey were playing this one, I think I would probably pick the Ravens. Not having both of those players is so rough. Pass rush looked a lot better. Owe looked good. Jabo looked good. But this, I don't know. They're just so outmanned injury-wise. Maybe I'm wrong. This is one that I don't have a good feel for. I am very proud of Zaycor Stadium, though, so I have a lot invested now in the Ravens winning.
I'm going to unveil my take again that Paycor wasted their money because they should have just directly sponsored Joe Burrow's contract.
It's a good take. It's a good take. But then when it's Zaycor,
Well, they couldn't be able to do it if it was Joe Burrow's contract. It wouldn't make sense.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
That'd be weird.
All right. Are you taking the Bengals or the Ravens?
I thought we were doing your weird pick segment that you sprung on me 30 seconds before we started taping at the end.
Okay, no, we'll save it.
I'm taking the Bengals.
Okay. I'm obsessed with me.
I picked the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. They better win at some point.
That's tough.
But I also picked the Cowboys to win, to make the Super Bowl. So I'm feeling okay about that.
Don't love the way Joe Burrow is talking about his injury this week, but that's...
You know what else I don't like about Joe Burrow? Weird haircut today.
It's not great.
Like a dramatically weird haircut in a way that makes me think he took the loss hard.
NFL thirst TikTok. I would say they're in shambles, but this Kelce Swift thing has given them nourishment for a century. They'll be fine. All right. Speaking of nourishment, let's come back and talk about Dolphins Patriots, which is a game I'm really excited about.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
Does this sound familiar? You're a maintenance specialist and you've been squaring off with a leaky radiator at your facility for hours. You're both drenched in sweat. You've thrown the whole playbook at it, but so far, it's got an answer for everything. What you need is a teammate, a pro who has seen it all before, and that's Grainger. With support specialists always ready to chat, the product you need, plus a million more, just give this ringer a ring. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or stop by one of their local branches. At 5-Hour Energy, they stan the fan. From the new-to-football fans to the born-for-the-love-of-the-game lifers, they know fandom isn't just a hobby, it's a way of life. We're talking about the fans who are born to fan. In fact, 79% of professional football fans have been fans of their favorite team since they were born. Enter the superfans, the unofficial captains of the fan base, known for outlandish antics, hearts of gold, and passion on top of passion. They're leading the charge for their teams and for their cities. It's about their deep love for the community. It's about pride in their colors. It's about rooting for their team, no matter what. No matter what team you root for, 5-Hour Energy knows being a fan requires heart, soul, and a whole lot of energy. That's why they've created a limited edition Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy to keep you fueled throughout the season. Available on 5hourenergy.com, shipped nationwide. That's the number 5hourenergy.com.
We're back. Speaking of him, actually, it could be Mike McDaniel, could be Tua, could be Tyreek Hill. There's just too many hymns on the Dolphins right now. The Dolphins. Miami, New England. That's not good.
Good.
Is it good? The Miami Dolphins.
It's good.
Hymns?
It's good.
Okay. Dolphins, Pats. Dolphins offense, Patriots defense is I probably the marquee. Although I said that about Dolphins offense, Chargers defense, and they absolutely demolished them. We're going to get to the Chargers because we're going to talk about that game.
I have a lot of Chargers notes.
I know you do. You always do. This is hard to talk about because the obvious question is, what do you do to stop the Miami offense? And if you or I had good answers for that, we would not be taping the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny. We would be on an NFL staff. It's probably the single most difficult thing in the NFL right now. Luckily, Steve Belichick is on the job. No, the Patriots defense. I mean, they looked awesome week one, by the way. I thought the Pats defense did against Philadelphia, and I thought from a game planning perspective, they had a lot of really good answers for all the stuff that Philadelphia presents on offense, which is very challenging with the RPOs and all of that. Miami, totally different challenge. I'll start here. The Chargers played a ton of man, I think the most man coverage in the NFL.
Oh my god
against Miami, and Tua,
you're not gonna believe this, that's in my Chargers notes.
Two through for 334 yards against man coverage, which according to ESPN analytics is the fourth most by any quarterback of the last 5 years. So I think that's kind of an interesting, that's where things get interesting for New England, a team that does play a fair amount of man coverage. They played a decent amount against the Eagles. The great Taylor Kiles, friend of both of us who has come on our show, was asking the corners, the Patriots corners today, all these great questions about, like, how do you stop the short motion? Do you play press man? I saw Jonathan Jones was like, you got to get your hands on Tyreek Hill. Problem is, Mike McDaniel is very good at finding ways to keep
luck,
you
buddy.
From getting your hands on Tyreek Hill.
Why didn't I think about it? A bunch of Chargers DBs are like, why didn't I think about that? Damn.
Let's just start here, though. Like, do you think they have a, like, defensively, this is a really good defense. Like, I'm not asking you to game plan here, but like, are you optimistic?
Speaking of like obvious things, here's a stat. The Eagles offensive line allowed 15 pressures to the Patriots, which was more than the Eagles allowed at all last year. So it would have been the most they allowed last year in a season where the offensive line played really well. We know what the Eagles are. So the Patriots can get pressure on you. That's probably the easiest way. And I always I make fun of it whenever we're always in a copycat league, and there'll be a four-man rush against Tom Brady with the Giants in the Super Bowl, and people will be like, well, you got to build a four-man rush out. I promise you, people are trying. We're trying. Like, I promise you, the GMs and the coaches have looked into generating and I'll do you one better. They're looking into generating a pass rush with three men as well. So they're on the case. But pressure the quarterback. It's really hard. 37% of the Dolphins' first downs went for a first down on Sunday, which is a remarkably high number. He basically, if you look at the clip, someone did a really good cut up on Twitter. Tyreek basically had a different motion on every single play. there was a good piece by this guy, Ryan Smith, who I don't know yet, but I don't know who he is, but he's very good. He wrote his very good Dolphins piece. He basically said that there were, let me get this right, 7 different defenders against Tyreek Hill that he caught passes against on 6 different route concepts. Okay.
Oh, he works for PFF.
He does.
Yeah.
Do you know Ryan Smith?
He hooked me up with an ultimate trial last year. Shout out to you, Ryan Smith.
So I was Ryan, like, buddy. Yeah. But there's a chart in there that I thought was really interesting. He was good on everything. He was good on play action. He was good on regular dropbacks. Yeah. 8.6 yards per attempt under pressure, which is would be remarkable when not under pressure, or at least impressive. And so I don't know what you do. Dolphins generated 17 explosive plays. There's some consternation about whether or not that's the most since 2012 or 2011. The Dolphins say their explosive play rate is the most since New Orleans did it and Detroit in the same day in 2012. Either way, it's been a long ass time since somebody had that many explosive plays. Is that just because Brandon Staley is incompetent? Probably not. But what I do know is that, and this is via Ian Harditz, the Tua in the last 2 years, number 2 in deep passing, number 2 in yards per attempt on deep passes, and number 1 in adjusted completion percentage down the field. He can throw the deep ball reliably. And I understand that's a combination of the receivers around him, the coaching, certainly. Mike McDaniel is a top 3 play caller in this league. But I don't know how you can look at this and say anything other than they're an absolute nightmare to defend. And I bet Bill Belichick feels the same way.
I think the point you made about pressure is where you have to start. That, I think, was probably what I was... I mean, I've talked to... Like, there's a lot of things I was impressed and awed by watching this Dolphins offense week one. Some of the little tweaks they made, the way they got guys open and played on, you know, it changed up their tendencies. Tua's creation outside the pocket, his throwing on the move, all that was really, really cool. But the thing that probably surprised me the most was how little pressure he was under, especially with Teron Armstead out of the game. So I think if you're a Pats fan, you have to hope that your front, which, as you just pointed out, was excellent against a very good Eagles offensive line, repeats that to some degree. You're going to get beat a fair amount. I mean, there's going to be a lot of plays where the ball comes out so quick, you're not going to have much time. But if Tua's got the ball for more than 2.5 seconds, I think that's where this starts for New England. Judon, Uche, Barmore, all of whom got pressure, played well last week. You know, they have to have the game of their lives. Behind them, you know, I think Charge tried to do this, but you do have to change up the picture for him post-snap for Tua. And again, I'm not saying it'll work. I'm just saying it's something that New England is good at.
I have a feeling Big Bill's in the lab.
I mean, the thing about the Pats, too, their back seven is they have so many different types of players and bodies to throw who can do different things. So, you know, like there, you could easily imagine a scenario where what Tua sees before the snap and after look very different. I'm not saying it's going to work. But yeah, I think the Chargers look like the Patriots defense is much better than the Chargers defense. I think the Chargers defense just is a lot less talented, frankly, than not just the Patriots, but maybe than what I thought. We'll get to
that. Hey, would you be embarrassed if you didn't generate any pressure on Tua and you let him carve you up to a historic amount of numbers, but also had the most expensive linebacker group in the NFL and the third most expensive defensive back group? I'm just asking hypothetically for a friend. Would you be embarrassed by that?
It's a tough scene. I mean, J.C. Jackson arguably lost in the game.
I actually, in a different word, different name pops into my head when I think who lost in the game, but we'll get there.
It's a lot. It's a few guys. It wasn't the offense, though, which is interesting, which we'll talk about. Anyways, I'm excited to see what New England does. I am not going to pretend like I have a good answer for that. On the other side of the ball, this is interesting to me because the Miami defense, which I've been touting all year, all offseason, could not stop the run for in this game. We'll get to the Charger side of that, but it was... a just absolute butt kicking in the trenches.
I do like that Vic Fangio is living the gimmick so much on Bend But Don't Break that he just has them kick their ass on the last possession of the game. He's just like, my thing is bend, don't break. I'm just going to bend over and over and over again. I'm not going to break, and I'm just going to send the house and smoke them on the last possession of the game.
Miami's allowed the Chargers on the ground to put a 0.31 EPA per play. That wasn't just the best in the NFL. That was more than twice as good as the next best rushing performance, which was, unsurprisingly, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. New England did not run the ball particularly well last week. I do think some of that has to do with the injuries that they had on their offensive line. We'll see if Strange or Unwenu are back this week. It's something to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. But I gotta think Billy O.B. was watching this game, watching how the Chargers were just getting north-south with the utmost of ease on Miami, and thinking, yeah, I'm gonna Ramondre Stevenson is going to have a day against this defense, because that is something that New England does want to do. And I think they can look better running the ball, especially combined with their RPO game, than they did last week. And I think that's the matchup I would attack if I was them.
I agree. I just don't think that's going to be enough points to beat the Dolphins. Yeah. And I also think that Mac Jones is just okay.
He's just okay, but that's upgrade over last year. How'd you feel watching the Patriots offense week one against Philadelphia?
There were a couple of ugly throws. Like, there was one where he hit Darius Slay in stride and Slay just dropped it. But much improved, and like competent plays. Like, I think that, I forget who said it last week, but someone was like, Matt Patricia's idea of an offensive plan was just a 50-50 balls with Mac Jones. Now, this is not Joe Burrow. Like, and so I think Bill O'Brien's a really good football coach whose career has been conflated with his managerial expertise or lack thereof. And so I'm actually hugely optimistic that things are going to work generally in the right direction in New England. They got Philly in a, as Lenny would call it, a human fight last week. Like, that did not have to go that way.
They should have won. I think as a Patriots fan, if you are a Patriots fan, there's a lot to feel good about from what you saw out of the offense, just in terms of general competence. But also, I thought like Mac Jones looked more comfortable under pressure. He had actually answers against the blitz. I thought some of their skill players looked good. Hunter Henry was like a beast. Kendrick Bourne, till the end, they had some key drops. But, I thought O'Brien versus the Eagles defense really had their number by the end of the game in terms of some of the concepts he was drawing up. So we'll see. I agree. It's very hard to pick against this Miami buzzsaw right now, and I'm not going to, but I do think I am personally excited to see what they do on defense. Okay. Let's do Packers Falcons, and then the last two games will go a little quicker.
You are just absolutely depriving me of my Chargers notes. I'm ready to burst through like the Kool-Aid guy. Go. All right. But I have a lot to say on this game too.
Okay. So Jordan Love, week one, this was a fun watch for me. Did you see a quote today? I think it was from Matt LaFleur, was asked, this is such a great question. Yes. That's a troll question. Did Jordan change anything? You said, nope, not a thing. He ran every play as I called it. Incredible quote.
So I've done a lot of legwork on that particular thing. And basically, I'm not the first person to say it, but there were two playbooks because Matt LaFleur had his stuff, and Aaron Rodgers loved the old school Mike McCarthy West Coast offense. And there were certain concepts like the strike drift kind of blind throw. There is a grift involved there, but this play is called drift, where it's a blind throw and it's play action, all that stuff. Rodgers got more comfortable with it, but it really was a mixture of those two offenses, because Rodgers loves spreading out defenses, letting the his cadence let the defense declare what they were doing and then go from there, whereas LaFleur wanted to do motion and all that stuff. And I don't think it's funny, because LaFleur pushed back all offseason on the idea that this was going to be his offense now, And the reason is, I think it's because his offense, and I know this is a cliche, but it's real. It's so multiple. He was doing so many different things. And I think it was Ben Fennell put it out there this week that I don't think anybody put more on tape this week than LaFleur in the first week. We're talking about inside zone, power, all the run shit, counter, duo. I'm reading it right now. Triple option.
They were doing some goofy stuff.
The gun, the pistol. That play action, like toss back thing that they did to Aaron Jones was phenomenal. And by the way, everybody had all these dumbass theories. If I could do anything, if I could have a dream job, it would be to just not consume any football talk from the draft until like a day before the season. And then I'd find out what happened, right? Because everybody comes up with these ideas, and the whole narrative was that they were just going to have Jordan Love just win with easy throws. Well, guess what? He was only one of, I believe, five guys who had an average depth of target over 10 on Sunday. Carr, Tua, Watson, Stafford, Love. Okay? He was going downfield. And part of that was that the Bears had no idea what was going on, so he could take those sort of risks. But that's what we're doing. Jordan Love, Jordan Love can throw. Did you see Matt Scheinman's thing with what David Bacciari said about leak?
No. What did he
say? So David Bacciari was, quote, begging the coaches to run leak because Luke Musgrave was open by 20 yards every time they ran it in practice. Well, maybe 30 versus the Bears. That's Peter Bukowski editorialized there.
The Packers' new look offense, right? About what we expected. More under center. When they were under center, I just looked on 19 of the plays, 15 had pre-snap motion, which previous quarterback poorly did not like. Fair amount of play action. What would concern me for Atlanta as you look ahead to this matchup, just based on what we saw week one, which I thought the defense did some good things against Carolina. Obviously, Jesse Bates was incredible. They played a lot of man coverage.
Yep.
Didn't blitz much. Light boxes. That's not a good formula against everything I just described offensively. And ultimately, like, it's a scheme thing. I think it's going to be a talent thing, especially against a Green Bay offensive line. That's very good. But Matt LaFleur is in his back right now. And this just feels like a matchup that favors Green Bay on that side of the ball.
So I'm in agreement with you. I think Jesse Bates is really special, and people in Cincinnati knew it.
He rules.
And I think there's a lot of people who wish he's still played there. I will say this: Ryan Nielsen, the new DC in Atlanta, is really good, and he really had them prepped. And I don't know if you saw any of the quotes from the last couple of days, but basically, like, I mean, Bates kind of bullied Bryce Young, and it seems like they kind of knew where he was going with the ball all the time. Just watch the plays. But what Bates basically said was that Young likes to throw the ball inside the hashes, and that both of them were a 2x2 formation, very similar routes, try to hit a dig in the middle of the field. And the coaches basically told Jesse Bates what was going to happen, and Bates, with his own film study, was able to snuff that out. But with Love, like, I think the offense was so varied. I don't think you're going to have that this week where you're going to be able to just sit on his routes or whatever. I think LaFleur is I wouldn't want to rank him. Mike McDaniel's a better play caller, but LaFleur is certainly in that mix there. And now he gets to do, again, not that it's the quote unquote Matt LaFleur offense, but he just doesn't have to go through all the stuff. Like Rodgers had told me, like, especially at practice, he just wanted tempo on the plays. He didn't want motion. He just wanted to snap the ball quickly. I mean, there was just some, I wouldn't say creative conflict, because I do think that they were able to find a happy medium. He did win MVPs under Matt LaFleur, but it's just a little bit different when you don't have to make sure that your quarterback likes everything. And I think that's probably a big weight off of his shoulders, even if I do think that they enjoyed working together.
Yeah, I think that's a fair sort of appraisal of the situation. Desmond Ridder's got to push the ball downfield more than what we saw. That was a brutal watch. And I don't think it's all him. I think some of it was play calling. Some of it was the pass protection, which was pretty sus. But Arthur Smith, this is not about fantasy football. If you draft a tight end and a wide receiver in the first round, back-to-back years, you're supposed to use them. And I pumped up the Falcons offense as much as anyone this offseason, but the concept of like positional football where everyone's blocking, everyone's running routes or whatever, you got to throw sometimes to the people running routes who do different things. It's just so utterly congested and very unpleasant to watch.
The process mistake, I'm always evaluating myself. The process mistake was that I was like, well, Desmond Ridder is not Marcus Mariota, so he'll be better. Am I sure about that? Am I sure about that? I do think I think Mariota was really bad last year. And I think, by the way, I think the Falcons are still going to win the division. The one thing I'll say about the Smith thing, and you just brought it up, it is not at all fantasy football. And also, he said after the game, like, oh, you know, those guys don't care if they don't get targets. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they care.
Yeah, they do. And this is not specific to Atlanta, but the amount of guys I've talked to who are like, basically, like, most guys just want to know that they've done their job in a given game and can start the process towards, like, the next contract. Like, they're moving towards that, right? Like, that's the way most people think. And it's funny. I can bring them up in the next segment, but, like, when I was talking to Vrabel for a long time, like, his motivational technique is literally just like, we're all human and you can, like, motivate guys by being like, if you do this, you will make money, right? That's how these guys process things. And like, even he was like, he would tell guys, like, improve your conditioning, you'll be on the play for more plays, and then someone, either us or that some other team, will pay you money. Like, that's literally just run this damn play, okay? And, like, that's it. And so I'm not making a specific Falcons point. I'm just making the point that, like, at some point, if you have talent and you don't utilize that, it becomes a problem. And nobody, Bill Walsh, Bill Belichick, Vince Lombardi, is a good enough coach to where if you've got these guys who are uber athletes who've performed at the college level, who are high draft capital, who want huge second contracts, no one's going to say, you know what? We won with Desmond Ridder. I'm happy. Unless the Falcons are like, hey, we're going to reward you for like what you could have done if you played in a pass first offense.
Yeah, it just can't look like it did week one for me to feel good about this team moving forward. I do think, like, you know, the Packers run defense, which was a major issue last year, looked a little bit better. Chicago's offense is such a problem. I actually kind of found it hard to assess, like, how much of this is real. And their defense on both sides of the ball with Green Bay.
Oh my God.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Falcons come into this one and continue to try to run the ball at a really high rate. I just want to see something, man. Just want to see something. I do have the Packers.
Me too.
Assume you as well. Okay. Finally, let's do Chargers.
Oh my God.
Chargers Titans. So you want to just get all your Chargers thoughts off your chest? Yeah. You want to start that way?
Brandon Staley, defensive guru. What is it you say you do here? Couple things here. I already went through the explosive plays. This, by EPA, was the worst defensive performance of the Staley era. This was, and by the way, Daniel Popper at The Athletic, our buddy, basically said that Staley vowed to improve explosive plays, and they were 31st in the league in explosive plays allowed. He didn't do it. Tua pressured on 14 of 45 pass attempts. In single coverage, Tyreek Hill, 6 catches on 10 targets, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns. Overall, 8.2 yards per play allowed. Maybe most embarrassing, Ryan Tannehill was trying to shut down reporters from asking him questions today about New Orleans, and he kept saying, I just want to move on to San Diego. And he said it again. But I went through the how expensive the defense is, third most expensive defensive back unit in the NFL, most expensive linebacker unit, talent all over the place. And it just seems like nobody's maximizing. I just feel like there's a bunch of coaches, and like the rumor was always that Sean Payton wanted that job. And that would bring its own issues, right? But I would feel if the Spanos family paid market rate. I don't pretend to know what's going on with the coaching market there as far as money goes. But it seems to me that there's a whole bunch of people who would walk to Los Angeles to coach that level of talent, that quarterback talent, and to run it back with Brandon Staley, who, long pause, your podcast feed has not gone out. Not a ton of people say in the league are like, damn, Brandon Staley's a good football coach. Not a ton of people say that. Okay, not a lot of buzz for Brandon Staley when you talk to people around the league. That the water cooler, people in other facilities are not like, you know who's a stud? Brandon Staley. I will leave it at that.
Here's what I'll say about this game.
Well, they're probably going to win this game. They're probably going to win this game, by the way.
If Brandon Staley's on the hot seat, I think he probably is. Ryan Tannehill is on the quarterback equivalent right now. My man is on washed watch. That Titans-Saints game, oh, woof, woof. That was very unpleasant watch. All the things that the Chargers struggled with against the Dolphins, don't think are going to be a problem in this one. A lot easier to play man coverage against this group, especially when the quarterback is just missing wide open dudes. I've really defended Tannehill a lot, and I actually feel like at a lot of points in his career, he's been pretty underrated. Mm-hmm. He isn't doing the things he does well, like stand in the pocket and take pressure and has a reasonably strong arm, yeah. All of that. He just looks rough. And I think I wouldn't be surprised. I don't have the Titans schedule in front of me. If the Levis Willis, I don't know what the hell is going on there. The quarterback at number two. I don't know what the status is of Levis's health, but yeah, somebody is going to be taking this guy's job pretty soon.
The aforementioned chart of time to pressure versus number of sacks taken, Ryan Tannehill's line gave him above average time. I'm not saying they looked like the Dallas Cowboys line out there, but it was above average time if you look at it. And he still took a bunch of sacks. Some of the throws you mentioned, there was that weird flea flicker. I don't even know you would call it motion. You just missed the guy. He had him by two steps.
Chig. He was wide open.
Yep, Tajay Spears. There was one where he was open, could have had a touchdown on a wheel route. Didn't happen for him.
Yep, down the sideline. He missed two guys on wheel routes. Sorry,
I don't remember the other wheel route. All the missed wheel routes, I'll just kind of pile up in my brain. I don't think he's got the athleticism he used to. I don't think he has the confidence he used to. And that's the one thing that people have said, and I've written this a bunch, about how much quarterbacks around the league respected his play-action game because he would just fire in these blind throws that a lot of guys are just not comfortable making. The Titans reporters are basically saying Mike Vrabel was as annoyed as they've ever seen him today. Saw a couple tweets about that.
Oh, boy.
And that is really a high bar. Ooh, that is a buddy. High
that,
bar.
That is an annoyed gentleman, generally.
That is one annoyed gentleman. And so I don't know where they go on this, but these are two teams right now. I just don't. I would prefer not to watch this game on Sunday.
Well, okay, let's say that to my Chargers fans, if you're still here. I thought the offense looked good against Miami. I talked earlier about how unbelievably efficient they were running the ball. This is, and we'll see. Again, the Titans' run defense is much better than the Dolphins run defense. The Titans run defense was the best in the NFL last year. But the Chargers run game was, and I've said this a lot, as big of a problem last season as the lack of a downfield passing attack. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you heard the numbers earlier. It was an unbelievable day on the ground. And I think it wasn't just statistically that they were great, but watching them, the run game looked different. It was much more physical, downhill, a lot of man blocking runs, a lot of Eckler and Kelly's big runs came inside between the tackles. It was mostly like in 11 personnel, Eckler had an 80% success rate. Kelly had a 90% success rate, which is wild. So they face the Titans defense that I think is much stouter against the run, but I suspect we'll deploy a pretty similar approach in just terms of let's put an umbrella on this. And I think they're going to have success again based on what we saw, because it looked efficient. And that's, you know, like that would be the story of Dolphins Chargers if they hadn't choked, if the defense hadn't choked at the end. We'd be talking about how damn good Austin Eckler looked week one.
Mm-hmm. I'd be talking about those missed wheel routes in New Orleans. I'd be like, man, I don't really know. You see the Titans game? Those missed wheel routes. Yeah, I agree. Are we nearing blow it up territory for the Titans? Or are we past it? Should they have blown it up more than they did?
They're not going to blow it up while Vrabel's there.
I know.
Here, let me pull up the schedule. Okay, hold on. Let's do the Ryan Tannehill thing right now, because I do think this is going to be, if the Chargers win, and maybe the Titans will have success running the ball or whatever. Okay, dude, you got the Browns defense next week, then the Bengals. So that's, and then you get the Colts, Ravens, Falcons. Mm-hmm. So Colts and the Ravens, a little bit easier for a young quarterback. Feels like I could see week 4 or 5 them making a change at quarterback if Tannehill doesn't look better.
I was there very early in camp. It's possible Willis has an edge on Levis.
Week 1 when they both played, but then Levis got hurt and kind of...
On the other hand, the Titans are just a weird franchise.
They're very weird. Very weird team. Hard to predict. I don't know what's... They're just like, they're in no man's land. You know, some of the young players look good. Skronsky. I didn't think the pass protection mm-hmm. was that bad. Okay.
Culture team.
This holiday season, don't forget your number one fan. You. So what's a gift you could use? Maybe go to more home games or even travel to some away games while rocking a new away team jersey. Well, we've got something for you. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. With Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. That'll help with that swanky away jersey. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. What does it feel like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first pick up those tongs and now you're the one running the grill. It's indescribable, like something you've never felt before. All the mouth-watering anticipation of new possibilities, whether that's making a perfect cheeseburger or treating your family to a grilled baked potato, which you know will forever change the way they look at potatoes. With AT&T Next Up Anytime, you can feel this way again and again. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on us and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See att.com/iPhone for details.
Before we get to the picks, this is going to be a real quick discussion. It did look like one of the meteor games when I sent you a schedule a few days ago, Jets-Cowboys. I think it's fun, like lost in the 40-0 beatdown is we didn't really learn much about the Cowboys offense, because you don't learn much in games like that when an offense is ahead. But now this offense is facing a Jets defense that is probably feeling themselves after winning the game, but obviously is at a disadvantage quarterback wise. Did you feel like you came away with anything watching Dak, Tony Pollard?
Yeah.
Land, like, you know, I mean, I watched the first quarter.
In tribute to my old boss and current buddy, Bill Simmons, broken axle game where just everything started going downhill and right. I almost couldn't glean from it. The only thing you can take from it on the defensive end is the Giants allowed more pressures, 31, than any team since in basically 2 years. And that's first of all, Dallas had the best pressure rate in the league last year. And I think because of the sack totals of Philadelphia, we overlooked that, but that was number one was Dallas. And my prediction is Dallas does it again. And my prediction is Dallas wins, makes the Super Bowl. But that kind of game, it just, everything was just so disjointed and weird that I couldn't, and the field position was so weird and all that stuff. And you're looking at all the turnovers. I had a real tough time saying like, this is what I learned about the Cowboys offense. It was honestly like a college game. It was like a college game where Florida State plays Southern Miss, and like the coolest thing is that Keon Coleman leapfrogged some guy, you know? Well, and it's I don't know what I learned about Jordan Travis.
I think you, in taking a page from the Bills, don't do that. The Jets, the offense is so good that you can't afford to F around, right? Like, I suspect it's going to be like a very efficient, conservative game plan offensively. Dak, the ball's going to cut the ball. He was actually throwing the ball really quick against New York as well, I think, because the New York defensive line is no joke. Get the ball out quick.
I'm gonna start a narrative that Nate Hackett finally gets to run his offense without Rodgers.
Don't get me started. One thing I did kind of find interesting in the Bills game that sort of flew under the radar amidst the quarterbacks and all the everything and the Josh, and they were throwing at Sauce Gardner a lot. With some success. That's something to keep an eye on, because teams just didn't throw at him last year. I would be very interested in seeing. I mean, with CeeDee Lamb, you're always going to be attacking the middle of the field a fair amount, which is, I think, generally a good game plan against New York. But that's just something to monitor if Dallas is willing to go at Gardner the way that Buffalo was.
It is. Cornerbacks, when teams go at cornerbacks, it's actually one of my favorite things, because you just get to check in on the reputation, you know, because we always look at like the PFF data is always like coverage snaps per or whatever it is, how many times they throw to you per snap, and it's like the great ones, it's always really, really high, and then when someone's like, yeah, we're gonna go straight to them, that's cinema.
Pat Pete had a there was so obvious in the Niners game that they were going at Patrick Peterson at a certain point, and it becomes a little bit of a, you know, the kids watching Homer Simpson beat down
part of it. So first of all, he's not as fast as he was, which I believe he's discussed, and if he hasn't discussed it, maybe he should. But it's also because he went on a podcast and said they had a bunch of tests, right?
Never say that. Never podcast that. You shouldn't. Don't do it. Be like Kyle. All right. Now you're going to help me do my picks. Are you ready?
I am.
This is not a branded segment. It is literally just me asking my guest every week to help me make my picks so that I can beat my family. My family. What?
Like, what do you win? We like, you know, Bill has million dollar picks. Do we just do like $100 picks?
My family, there's no money. Lenny just walked in. My family has a plaque in the living room, and your name goes on the plaque if you win. Picks. And it's a big deal. We talk about it a lot. It's a big deal in my family. So
it's just you. It's the four of you.
It's the four of us. Me, Sunman, Peter, percentage Isaac.
Have you won?
I think at this point, and I'm sure if they're listening, they'll correct me. I think we've all won two or three times. It's pretty close.
It's like that
right now.
NFC East. Super competitive.
Okay, Vikings at Eagles. The Eagles are down both James Bradbury and Kenneth Gainwell. I am still taking Philadelphia. Thoughts? Thursday night. Yeah. In Minnesota.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, 6.5. I know we're not doing spread, but I'm actually looking at the spread. Eagles win, Vikings cover. I know this is not part of plaque picks, but I'm throwing that in there.
Picks is good. I'll talk about the Vikings next week in depth. A lot of problems with that defense. Speaking of that game, Tampa, Chicago.
Old NFC Central matchup here. I love it.
I think last week was a reminder that Tampa's defense is still good, which people seem to have forgotten, even though they brought back like all their good players.
Yes. Do you have a is that leading
to Tampa.
A Tampa pick?
I'm okay. taking Tampa. Dude, Chicago. Ooh.
All right. So
the offense.
So
screens.
One of my
I can't watch another screen.
I
tapped out. Sorry, I'll stop.
I did a pod years ago. People still talk to me about every once in a while with the first year at the Ringer. It's because I interviewed these guys who did an academic study on the most statistically like advantageous year to bet football, and it's always week two. And all you need to do with like the home dogs thing, all you need to do is just bet on the teams that were 0-1 going against a 1-0 team in the second week of the season. Just hammer it over and over
again. Chicago?
Are
you saying Chicago?
No, you didn't know about this academic study that I uncovered in 2016, so you don't get to enjoy it. I'm going to pick the Bears only because they have a little more talent than they showed. Sounds like Chase Claypool, they're looking at all options to maybe bench him or something. He does not feel like he wants to do anything on a football field anymore.
No,
so
that was a rough one.
I'm a big addition by subtraction guy after week one. So let's ride with the Bears. Bear down.
Okay, so we're both on Green Bay over Atlanta in Atlanta. This is probably the hardest game of the week, in my opinion, to pick. Colts at Texans, two rookie quarterbacks. Colts are favored by one. I think, you know, people saw that they gave the Jags a hard time. But I'll say this, Kevin, I was really impressed by the Texans defense. I think they're going to be pretty good. I feel like they're ahead of schedule. I think the defensive line looks, you mentioned Grenard, Anderson looked amazing.
Will Anderson looked awesome.
He looked awesome. They're flying around the field. They're not quite, you know, San Francisco, but you feel like the D'Amico Ryans effect is real. So I'm going to take Houston. Take Houston because of their defense.
On the ESPN schedule, it tells you how low tickets are, and tickets for this game start at $19, so pack them in there in Houston. Houston's gonna win this game.
Detroit is favored by 5.5 visiting Seattle. The Seahawks are missing both of their starting tackles, which is why I shall be picking the Detroit Lions. Oh, also the Seahawks defense. That's just grim homerism right there. Well, it's not homerism. Yeah, it's
Detroit starts 2-0.
Okay, we already did the Chargers over the Titans. We got the Bengals over the Ravens. That one I could see being wrong. Vegas at Buffalo. Buffalo's favored by 9.5. Come on. Like, there's no way, Buffalo. I feel like this will be the start of a Josh Allen returns to normal streak that'll last for about 6 games.
Can I bring up here that I am out of Mike Ryan's...
We haven't talked about this. So,
well, no,
so
it's because
we're
I
in a survivor
Denver
league.
Over, we're in yes. a survivor. We're no longer in a survivor league because I'm
yeah,
out.
You're not. I'm in.
I believe I was out in week one last year too because I just hate certain teams. Not like from a bias standpoint. I just think some teams are just god awful, and I just pick against them no matter who. So I thought Sean Payton was going to immediately improve the Broncos, and I thought Vegas was going to be a complete tire fire. Turns out, the Broncos are still a tire fire. Did you see Russ's average depth of target on Sunday? It was like no. 4. Like, Sean, you know who hates Sean, Russell Wilson? Sean Payton. Which I think there's been this nice little journey of like, hey, he probably hates him. Then it's like, I think he likes him. And now it's like, no, he doesn't trust him at all. Anyway, I picked the Broncos over Vegas. I was wrong. I'm out. Mike Ryan has my $50.
I picked the Jags, which was a little bit of a ride, a little close. This week, I think I'm on the... We'll get to them.
Ooh.
Yeah. Last year, I picked against the Seahawks week one as an emotional hedge and then had a victorious chug when Seattle beat Denver week one.
I remember that. Are we doing the chug? Yeah. I haven't sent a chug in.
I think you got to do a chug. I don't know what I'll chug this year. Maybe milk?
I had to Venmo Mike a bunch of money today because I bought his Miami Temple tickets because he needs to stay in Miami to watch a Highline match.
So it's the most Mike Ryan sentence
ever. If anybody
ever
wants to know what being friends with Mike Ryan is like, I just
described
it.
We're both on the Chiefs over the Jags. As impressed as I was by Matthew Stafford, I think we can agree, the Niners over the Rams. They're favored by 8. Wow. That Rams defense, the Niners are just gonna just buzzsaw through.
I did love the we're still here comeback last week though. I know you hated it, but I'm just saying I like those guys.
I hated it, but Matthew Stafford is, I mean, that dude is still, people were telling me that all summer. Like our friend Seth Wickersham was like, dude, I was just at Rams practice. Matthew Stafford looks amazing. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I should have listened.
He never
left. Okay, this is my survivor pick. I'm going to take the Giants over Arizona this week. Little strategy just because, you know, you want to pick the mid teams right now. And
so, hey, can I ask you a question? They just lost by 40 points and they're on the road.
I don't care.
Okay.
It's Josh Dobbs.
Okay.
Josh Dobbs.
I'm just throwing out that the team
has had the most. I want a last dance about Josh Dobbs. Talk about the most interesting NFL career of any non-famous guy. Just getting called in. Josh Dobbs next week or Zach Wilson? Who you take?
Josh Dobbs. I believe I already told you that over text. I think Zach Wilson is the worst starting quarterback in the NFL.
Well, second coming up, he's about to play the Dallas Cowboys, who are favored by 9. I think we're both on the Cowboys there.
Yes.
Ooh, this is a tough one. Denver at Washington. No, pardon me. Washington at Denver. Denver is favored by only 3.5 at home, so it's basically a pick 'em. Ooh.
Denver.
Yeah, I think Denver. I'm going to do Denver too. Although, man, that Washington defensive line is so good. I think the Washington defense is really good. I'm going to take Washington. Changing my mind. Okay. I know Sam Howell is going to take a lot of sacks, but I don't care. I love the Washington defense so much.
And that altitude, okay. Holding the ball on for that long, and that don't altitude, care. It's over.
Dude, Russell Wilson, that's Sam Howell. You're looking at your future.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Just like weirdly, like stands back there with not enough athleticism to do it.
Okay, Miami at Patriots. We both picked the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Saints are at
wait.
Carolina,
can I? I'm gonna say something real quick. The Patriots are gonna go up like 14-0.
I know.
And that game, and Colin Tourist's gonna do it. You think Bill Belichick's not savoring this? He's gonna do that.
Oh, it's Sunday night. I'm excited for that game.
Yeah.
Okay. Monday night's a doubleheader. Saints at Panthers. I think I've got our guy Dan Orlovsky's on that one.
On Saints Panthers.
I think so. Yeah, he is. I'm gonna take the Saints. I don't think neither of these teams impressed me a great deal week one, but I think the Saints are just a better football team. Although the pass protection did not look great, and Carolina's pass rush did look pretty nice week one, so. There's that factor. But JC Horn's her, you know, it's, I don't know. The second game, the final game of the week is the Browns at Pittsburgh. The Browns are favored after their beatdown of Cincinnati. What do you think? Cam Hayward's out. Friend of the pod. Bad news.
Coworker.
Yeah. Also coworker. I think the Browns will be able to run the ball on Pittsburgh, and I think the Browns defense, as I discussed earlier, slaps, so I'm going to take Cleveland.
So, Shil Kapadia says in the Matt Canada recently. Did you see it?
Mm-mm.
I'm going to read it to you. The Steelers' offense is gone under Matt Canada 36 straight games without gaining 400 yards of offense. There have been 269 instances since 2021 where an offense has gained at least 400 yards in a game. Zero of those have been the Pittsburgh Steelers.
He's got to be on the hot seat, right?
When I wrote that Pickens piece, I actually enjoyed talking to him, but I wrote that Pickens piece and he was talking about the route tree that he wants Pickens to have. And so most people were like, hey, George Pickens, funny guy, good receiver. And there was a segment that was just screen grabbing Matt Canada saying he wants George Pickens to run more slants. And I delved into that world, like the anti Matt Canada Steelers Twitter. And it is the heart of darkness, man.
It's brutal. Yeah. I think they're also missing Deontay Johnson.
They are. But they got Pickens.
50-50 yeah, I know. I might start him. I do have him on my teams.
I am picking the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it. Feels like the Browns could be due for a come down after, you know, the, but I just, man, I'm really,
it's like a 13-7 type of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. That would make that. I could see that. I could see like a Watts, some Watson turnovers, you know? Thank you so much for everyone who left ratings and reviews. I read them all. They warmed my heart. I will be announcing the winners of the hat contest next week.
Wait, we're doing a contest? We're doing a contest?
You can enter if you leave a review.
What contest am I going to do on This Is Football? Like,
well, you got to have merch like me. Reviews. I have all these hats. No, I don't have that many left. It's limited edition.
Random football that says Quebec on it that I bought at a rest stop in Montreal years ago.
Do you have a Minicom show hat? It's a very hot item.
I have a.
Oh yeah, I give you one. All right. I will announce that.
Do I have a mug
next week? What's up?
Do I have a mug? Did you make mugs?
I haven't made mugs. That could be next.
Okay.
Should I do more merch?
Football mug.
Leave me reviews if you want more merch.
It sounds like the people are asking for it.
Well, the people should also be downloading, subscribing, rating, and review your new podcast, This Is Football. Go check it out. That was Kevin Clark. I promise I won't do that every time, but you were excellent. No. Thank you so much. Dan Marino,
Ryan Fitzpatrick, Debo Samuel on this week. Dominic Foxworth gets mad when I cite people and calls it name dropping, but it's just the guests. I'm sorry, Dominic.
And none of them compared to my guest this week, which was you. Thank you for joining us. As always, you guys can check out the pod on YouTube. See you on Tuesday. Wow.